Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, Jack Spencer, and Stephanie McLean. Joining us today, political consultant on the Democratic side. Thanks for making the journey over here.
Appreciate it.
All right. So later this month, Stephanie, we're going to have all of the Democratic candidates at the Fox Theater in Detroit for the second round of Democratic presidential debates. Why should we care?
Because obviously the Democrats lost Michigan 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, and came roaring back in 2018. Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, these are all vital states for Democrats. And so when the party organized these debates, I'm pretty sure they had that in mind. It's also important because I think being in Michigan, they'll have to address Michigan issues, infrastructure, rural disconnects with internet, things like that. And it gives, I think the local channels are going to be discussing the debates before they happen for upwards of a week, which, again, brings more attention to the debates, and it gives people in Michigan a longer and larger opportunity to see who these folks are and what they're about.
Does it matter that, as far as the presidential primary goes, Michigan's kind of in the middle of the pack? I mean, we're March 10, somewhere in there, after that big Super Tuesday. So by the time that we get to vote here in Michigan, there could only be 3, 4, 5 candidates. Shoot, we could already have the nominee already selected by the time we get to it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that a state like Michigan is so far down the road in the terms of the presidential primary. But I've seen primaries where things go on a while. Bernie and Hillary, Hillary and Obama, you know, that didn't get finished up cleanly right before. So Michigan has a role to play. We're a year out, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. Anything could happen. That's the great thing about presidential politics. Anybody who takes a general election poll right now is stupid. You know, it's great for headlines and all that stuff, but it's meaningless. It's meaningless.
Well, frankly, I think that if they didn't have it centered in Michigan, if they these kinds of things weren't taking place, we'd be asking why they weren't. I mean, after what happened with Trump taking Michigan for the first time a Republican had taken Michigan since 1988, this begins to center everything, getting all in the run-up to the eventual election, that nationally and everything else, it sort of sets up the story that Michigan is one of the battleground states. Whether that's going to actually play out that way or not, we don't know. But going forward, if they weren't doing things like this in Michigan, somebody along the line would say, hey, wait a minute, why aren't they? So I think this is all part of the national narrative that now has Michigan included, and it'll be Pennsylvania and Wisconsin too, which, remember, Pennsylvania was the only one of those three that was considered battleground in 2016. And I just think it starts to set that national narrative on how people perceive it. And I suspect when you're a battleground state, it's a little harder for people to not get interested if you're in Michigan, right from the beginning you're known as a battleground state.
That's a good point, Jack. John, what's your thoughts on this?
I think what's going to be interesting is to see if the moderators actually bring up Midwestern issues. If it's a repeat of what we saw the week before the 4th, it's unfortunate for the party, because I think the party actually has to start speaking to the middle of the country, and they're really not doing that right now very well.
It's kind of more of the coast. So you watched the first two debates.
I did.
Yeah. What was your takeaways? Oh, let's start with night one, with the Elizabeth Warren one. What was your takeaway?
You know, I like Elizabeth Warren, but I like her in the Senate. You know, she's never been a favorite of mine for president, but, you know, I don't think she can win. I don't know.
Is that the problem?
Yeah.
She's not moderate enough? She can't appeal to the middle?
I don't know. Because, you know, when we talk about Kamala Harris, I have a completely different opinion. But it's clear to me that she far and away walked away that night. Mm-hmm. Another person I'm very interested in is Amy Klobuchar, and I think she was a little disappointing that night. You know, the second night, clearing away, you know, Kamala Harris took it. You know, Sanders, I think, did poorly. Biden really messed up.
He didn't seem as prepared as he could have been. I mean, this could have been one of those situations where I think he thought maybe he could just show up and that was going to be good enough, and maybe wasn't prepared for the slings and arrows that were going to come at him. And maybe the Detroit one is going to be a little different for him.
Yeah. See, he was prepared up until... Well, and let me tell you why. Who's the guy? Swalwell out of California, right? So he starts hitting him with this, pass the torch, pass the torch, pass the torch.
which I thought was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. It was a great thing. That's the only thing he had to say, but it was a great thing. but when you saw Biden react, he grinned from ear to ear, and he was just a class act, and okay, buddy, nobody knows who you are. You got to get your... And I thought, wow, Biden's doing really well. Kamala Harris comes out and says, we don't want a food fight. Americans want to know how to put food on the table. And that made me step back because it was a great line, right?
And
I'm sure it was well rehearsed. Yeah.
Well delivered, and the timing was perfect.
Yes, it was. It was. Which shows a little courage on her part, I think, because it's hard to get up in a room full of 9 other Democrats with some stature, and pull that kind of stuff off and not have it look forced. But then when she talked about the busing thing, all Biden had to do was stop, turn around, and say, you know what? I was wrong. I'm sorry. And that would have deflated the entire issue and it would have gone away. But a lot of politicians these days are afraid to say that they were wrong, that they had made a mistake once in their past. And the other guy that stood out for me was Mayor Pete, because he was asked about the shooting incident in South Bend, and he said, I didn't get the job done. And again, my jaw dropped, because when was the last time you heard a politician take responsibility for something?
Well, Snyder for the Flint water crisis, but it is extremely rare. I know. I knew I was going to get an eye roll out of you, Stephanie. You didn't disappoint on that. But I did want to bounce back to John, because we had a conversation about how Biden reacted to the Kamala Harris busing thing. And you thought he could have stood up for himself a little better.
I thought there was a clear opportunity for him to have that moment where he can and point to his experience and literally say, I mean, look, she was hitting on him on the fact that he had said something, former senators who were segregationists. And I think what he should have done is kind of stood up and said, this is the time I spent in the United States Senate. This is the legislation we passed on civil rights. And I would have said, albeit I had to work with people who held views that I hold abhorrent, but in order to accomplish something, and on the world stage, as a president, you have to work with people who hold views that you feel are abhorrent. And that, Madam Senator, is what you have to do as a leader.
That's a good point. But I would say that that's not where she scored her points. It wasn't on the Southern Dems. It was the fact that he then went on to sound like a Southern Dem from the 70s. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, I don't oppose busing. You had a great city council or whatever, and it's a states' rights issue. When was the last time you heard anybody but a Republican or a Southern Democrat use states' rights? I mean, that is, states' rights to me is, you know, dog whistling for racism. And that's where she scored her points. And that's where he really messed up.
I'm wondering if it would have been impossible for Biden to have given her a history lesson. My memory of 1972, George Wallace was cleaning up on the busing issue on the Democratic side. I believe he was leading in terms of winning primaries. He won the Michigan primary. And as a matter of fact, where we sit right here in MERS, we're right across the street from where the Civic Center used to be, where he showed up, I think it was on a Friday night, because I was a long-haired protester hollering at the time. I remember being there. And he got shot over the weekend in Laurel, Maryland. And the picture in the paper the next day was him holding up the newspaper with his victories in Maryland and Michigan's Democratic primaries. And the reason he was winning partly was because busing was so unpopular, even among the black population, because parents did not care a lot about or like the idea of their kids having to get up at 4:30 in the morning to have to be bused across the city. So I think that's a very complicated situation to come back this long afterward and try to say, you should have this or you should have that. That did not fit what was happening at the time.
Even on the states' rights issue, I know you think it's a dog whistle, but I think he could have very clearly explained his position. And if I remember right from his book, his point was, yes, the federal government should get involved, but first we should be encouraging the states and the cities to get involved and resolve the issue on their own. If we have to, the federal government then should get involved. That's the way I thought he explained it in his book. I might be wrong, but...
He didn't do that on stage, though, because
no,
I think she gave him the opportunity to do that.
I think he could have.
Yeah. But, I mean, states' rights, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may change in the future years, but right now it's a dog whistle. It may change because we're now seeing the sanctuary city thing and things like that, where Democrats are becoming a little more interested in states' rights. But I don't think it's a good time to bring it up.
You also could have softened it by saying, look, as parents, we all want as much control and influence in our schools as we can get. Let's ask them to solve this issue first. If they can't or won't, that's when the federal government should have gotten involved. That was my position. I think he would have walked away from it unscathed.
I agree.
Jack, do you think he would have had time to talk about the history lesson you're talking about? I mean, you only get, what, maybe a minute? I mean, if you get a minute to respond, that's a long time.
I admit it took me a little while to sit here and think of it, so I shouldn't be judging somebody who has to come up with it on stage. But knowing what was going on at the time, and to say that somehow there's something wrong about being against busing back then, if you could just remember that it was actually polling unpopularly both with whites and blacks at the time, and that George Wallace was cleaning up on the issue. That alone is giving at least a little historical perspective on what somebody at the time on the Democratic Party was facing.
He can recover or not? What do you think, Steph?
Oh, of course. I think he's got the experience. He's been through so many of these campaigns. Of course he can recover. I don't know that he can recover sort of young voters that are looking at him, Elizabeth Warren, Sanders, Kamala. I don't know that he can recover with those voters. But, you know, if it comes down the road 6 months from now, you know, as we're eking into Iowa, that he's the only one who can clearly defeat Trump, people are going to coalesce around that.
I said in the last podcast that one of the things that they have to do to spice us up is turn this into a Survivor or American Idol-like situation in which you have the audience put in their favorites, and whoever gets the fewest number of votes after both debates gets kicked off the stage and must suspend their campaign immediately. Presuming that this was the case, Stephanie, who do you think would have been the one who was kicked off the stage?
One?
Yeah, just one. Just one, because you only get one.
There were so many.
I know there are so many. I know there's so many to choose from. But which one do you think can go ahead and check out? Would have gotten the fewest number of votes?
Marianne Williamson.
I was going to say that.
Were you really? Oh, I thought she was enlightening. I thought she had encouraging things to say.
She did, but ending up with defeating hate with love is not really, again, people are interested in putting food on the table and good schools for their kids and.
See, I was going to say that guy from Maryland, Delaney.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say him or one of the people from Colorado, because I don't understand.
Hickenlooper.
Yeah, Hickenlooper or that senator. Why do you need two guys from Colorado? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, Hickenlooper, you know, has led this blessed life in politics, right? Everything he touches turns to gold, and he figured he ran Denver and was a governor, so why shouldn't he be president? And God bless him, but, you know, he did himself no favors. De Blasio, I thought, was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't think he was bad either.
See, I'm from New York, and we know De Blasio. And we know he can't run a hot dog stand, much less a city or a country. But America doesn't know that, and they saw him as a tough guy willing to take everybody on and take on Trump. So I think he actually could be, you know, for a little while anyway, one of those undergrounder that, you know.
He'll have his moment, you mean?
Yeah, we'll have his moment, yeah. Especially if he keeps it up in another debate.
Before we get into our next subject, I wanted to ask you about the rush to find a Democratic nominee right now, Stephanie. And you're not a big fan of rallying behind somebody right now, correct?
I'm not. You know, the whole Survivor, let's kick somebody off. I mean, as I mentioned before, you know, we've got a year to go in this process. And let's take that year. Let's take the time to try and get to know candidates. And we're seeing already what happens. You know, America loves to build somebody up and knock them down, you know, whether it's on television, the movies, or politics. And so Kamala Harris got this big jump out of the first series of debates. People started pouring on her the day after. Well, let's see how she handles a little criticism and a little pressure. You know, and I think you have to see people over the course of a campaign. You know, how you campaign is not how you govern, but you do get to see elements of character and persistence and charisma and things of that nature. So let it play out.
We're also going to talk here about the news of the day, and that is the 3rd Congressional District. It seems like every day there's something different happening. And on Monday, we had a new candidate jump into the race, and it's Hillary Scholten. She's jumping in on the Democratic side, and what is significant here is that she appears to be the quote-unquote establishment favorite here, guys. She already has the endorsement of Winnie Brinks, the state senator from the area, who I know the DCCC wanted to get as their candidate, but she declined. Rachel Hood, state representative, former congressman, gubernatorial nominee Mark Schauer, and also the last Democratic candidate in the 3rd Congressional District, Kathy Albrow, is supporting her, as well as the former Michigan Democratic Party chair, Brandon Dillon. She's a civil rights attorney, and looks like the Democrats are going to make a push here. We'll start with you here, Stephanie. Do the Democrats have a realistic shot here in the 3rd Congressional?
They have a shot, just because of the turmoil that Amash has brought to that district. You know, you could see a situation where the Republican or conservative-leaning votes are split, and split enough that a Democrat squeaks through. It's not a Democratic seat. I mean, the numbers simply aren't there. But, you know, look what happened in Alabama. I mean, anything's possible, right?
Right. And we had Adrian Heman and Brian Biegun in here last week. And Brian thought, yeah, it's a possibility. Adrian just shut it right down. He shut her right down.
Shut it right down.
But now with Justin Amash saying he could run as an independent, it's got to put it in play, John.
If he actually runs for the third as an independent, then it would put it in play because he could peel some votes off the Republican Party. But I still don't believe he's going to run for Congress. I still think he's going to run for president on the Libertarian ticket or something like that.
All right. So, Jack, what's your thoughts here? I mean, if Justin Amash were to run as an independent.
I don't think Justin Amash competes with Trump backers for any votes. I don't see them being the same wheelhouse. If somebody's not going to vote, if somebody was going to vote for Justin Amash on the Libertarian side, I don't think they'd be voting for the Trump candidate anyway. I just don't see them as crisscrossing each other at all. It would be more the Republicans, you know, bringing up Alabama, if they pick some person who's just such a terrible candidate, then and that can happen at any time. I also think it's different when everybody's going to be running in their various primaries at that time. It's not going to be isolated and having people come in from the outside. So I don't think so. I think Amash is going to appeal to a very different number of people. That's why I said my guess was presidential, not running for Congress, because I think he actually would get more out of running for president.
Okay, so let's ask, and I want to get to that here in a second, but let's go through this. Can Justin Amash win re-election as an independent or a libertarian? Stephanie, the 3rd Congressional District, could he win?
I don't know. If there's no Democratic primary and Democrats cross over, maybe.
Okay. John, could he win re-election as an independent?
No.
Jack?
No, I don't believe he can.
See, I don't think he could either. I don't especially with straight ticket voting. I don't see how, I mean, that's such a tall hill to climb. So then the question I have.
But what if he defeats the Republican? Oh, I see what you're saying. As an independent. Okay, never mind.
I think the best, if he runs as an independent, the most effect he's going to have is by electing a Democrat, by peeling away moderate Republicans.
So if he.
That's the most effect he'll have in that race.
So if he's political future, then is spoiler, and he spoils the 3rd Congressional District for the Republicans, would he rather then spoil the presidential race conceivably for Donald Trump? Because I don't think he has really any ill will toward the Republicans in general. I think his problem is with Trump. And that's why I think he's going to run for president, because if he could just rain on somebody's parade, he would rather rain on Trump's.
And if you think about the way he rolled out his independent status, the fact that he has only been communicating on a national stage suggests to me that he's thinking long term about where is he going to be in the conversation post 2020. And if he really wants to have a long term lucrative career, I think he needs to run as the Libertarian candidate. He needs to be the spoiler. I think that would cement his position forever as a talking head or pundit, think tank person, however he wants to pursue it. But he has a very bright then national future. That's why I don't see him coming back to the 3rd Congressional District. I think he's just basically written it off.
Jack?
See, I don't have the same perception at all of his problems. I think his problem was he's absolutely dedicated to voting according to the Constitution. I think that was fine when Obama was president because he could vote no, 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 and he didn't stand out any different from the rest of the Republicans that much because they were voting no, no, no. The simple fact of the matter is, if you are going to vote according to the U.S. Constitution, really, the way Congress does things now, you're going to be voting no an awful lot. Because for one thing, you can't have all these combinations, these gigantic, huge bills that have all kinds of things in it. You're going to find something in there that somebody like an Amash will say, that's unconstitutional, that's enough reason to vote no. So I don't think it would be, I mean, it may be more pronounced because of Trump, but I think he was going to have a trouble no matter what. Once he was on the side where people wanted him to vote, yes. If he was going to be principled, which he is, and vote the Constitution, he was still going to be voting no an awful lot. And I also think nationally he's not going to do any better or worse than any other libertarian would do.
Right. I mean, he'll get his 5% or maybe 6%. And maybe in Michigan he does even a little better because he's from Michigan. Let's say he gets 7-8% in the state of Michigan. Well, that could be enough.
How many votes did Trump win the state of Michigan by? Wasn't it, what, 10,000, 12,000, something like that?
11-something.
Yeah. So there you go.
That could be enough. So he could cost Trump Michigan.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if you look at it, it looks like he's fine letting his political career kind of turn into a meteor crashing toward the earth. I mean, if you're going to go out with a bang, go out with a bang.
I just don't see the meteor status. I mean, we're giving him a lot of attention here in Michigan because he's from Michigan. But no, seriously.
Yeah, that's.
I question whether or not he's got the oomph to take this thing national in 6 weeks, which is what you've got to do. You know, he's already way behind in terms of a presidential campaign. Now, if you can get, you know, if you can get the retweets and, you know, the followers and, you know, get some capital on social media and that gets you a couple of national television shows, then okay. But I don't see him moving in that direction. Like, why not capitalize on this announcement, you know?
That's a good point. In other words, I mean, you might as well, if you're going to do it.
Right, and, go big or go home.
But maybe he's still fishing around for maybe a big funder who would kind of help move things along.
Like we're all the anti-Trump people from, you know, never Trump people from 3 years ago.
Yeah, right. How come you're not getting behind me? You know, kind of like a Club for Growth kind of person or Mackinac Center person, but on a bigger scale, who believes in ideology he's pushing.
And maybe that is what he's working on, and he's doing it quietly, which is, you know, how you're supposed to do it. But
isn't the schedule, though, usually for the Libertarian selection much later than, I mean, it doesn't even get started until
next
year.
It takes them a while to agree on the shape of the table, yes. I think. It's a little bit harder to get together.
And whether there should be a table.
Yeah, and I don't know how much who's going to. The only people who are going to give him money are going to be people who I become convinced that it's worth their money. And I don't know how many of them are out there right now.
I think the Libertarian candidate, period, is going to get more money than you think. I think that's going to be a tactic. We're going to give them as much attention as we can. In hopes of peeling off Republican support. I would do that if I were running a national organization that wanted to influence the presidential outcome.
Yeah, I guess the other question we got to ask is, do the Libertarians really want him? I mean, we know that he's right on the issues on the fiscal side, but is he right on the social side? I mean, is he in support of gay marriage, gay rights? He voted the wrong way on a right-to-life issue, but that's not because he doesn't like right-to-life. That was just because he didn't like
the Constitution. Constitutional technicality.
That's correct. So it's not that he's pro-choice. That's not the thing. He is pro-life. So that's why I wonder, on the Libertarian side, when Gary Johnson got it 3 years ago, that wasn't without controversy.
Right, right.
There was a lot of
hubbub. And I think, you know, my colleagues and me included, we're all salivating at the fact, you know, the thought of a Jill Stein on their side. You know, Jill Stein killed us in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, period. Mm-hmm. Without those Jill Stein votes, Clinton would have taken each of those states.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't say
like George W. Bush hated Ross Perot, mm-hmm. You know.
And you can't say that Gary Johnson took votes away from Trump. It wasn't the same thing because Gary Johnson was taking them from Hillary and taking them away from Trump, almost equal.
Right, exactly.
All right, one other thing I wanted to bring up, guys, is the West Michigan Policy Forum has put together their latest presentation to the legislature on what to do about finding additional money to help pay for the roads. And this particular idea was put together at the West Michigan Policy Forum's insistence by PricewaterhouseCooper, who has given a presentation to the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader, Mike Shirkey. The idea is to use money from the teacher retirement system, or you could also go to the lottery if you wanted to, but basically bond against the teacher retirement system. The idea is to take maybe $900 million to maybe $1 billion and bond against that so you get the money up front. And then when you have the money up front, invest in a way where you're making more money off of the money that you're borrowing than you are paying in the debt service or the interest that you ultimately have to pay when you borrow money. And then using the additional money now that you have made through the scheme and using that as a new revenue stream to pay for the roads. Now, a derivative of this is using the lottery and basically selling off the lottery is a cheap and easy way to say it, but that's not exactly what you're doing. But a private operator would pay the state money up front to then operate the lottery, and then the private industry would make money on the lottery. That's a way to think of it. But different and new creative schemes that are being considered as a way to pay for the roads and a way that you don't have to do the gas tax. Stephanie, what do you think? Is this an idea, an alternative, let's say, to fixing the damn roads?
I think they're both gimmicks, but I think attacking and cannibalizing, which is what you would be doing, the teacher's retirement system is particularly egregious. I mean, we haven't done enough to teachers in the state, honestly. And you're going to take money and say you're going to put it in the stock market because God knows you'll make more money there. Well, until the stock market crashes, which we all know it will do periodically. You know, the teacher's pension is already controlled by people who are private, you know, private investment people. So it's, you know, it's a gimmick, but it's like, what else can we do to the teachers of public school in the state? Maybe we should just round them up with pitchforks and torches and march them off somewhere.
John, I know this is a creative way that we could put some money into the system, and you could do it without raising taxes. There is some enticement here.
It's a search for a solution that doesn't require a tough political vote, and that's all it is. I kind of liken it to we're in the glue-sniffing stage of the negotiation process. We're looking at selling the Blue Water Bridge. We're looking at toll roads. We're looking at privatizing the lottery. We're looking at, you know, clearly the investment managers at the public school employees retirement system are incapable of making real returns, but we can, and therefore we're going to use that to raise money for the roads. What was it? I think it was Mr. Studley's line. We're trying to solve this problem with unicorns and pixie dust. And until we get off that unicorn and pixie dust, that glue-sniffing phase, we're not going to really solve the problem.
Yeah, but doing gimmicks with teacher retirement, that would be an easier vote than raising taxes,
it, Jack? I don't see what's so hard about this or so bad about it. You know, there's a fairly good chance that the day that the payment comes due with term limits, almost nobody who voted for it will be around anymore.
That is one of the problems with term limits, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but I was being facetious just on the fact that it is another way of getting money up front right now, shorter term, and somewhere down the line, you're going to be, as we see now, there's all this complaining about what they did back then. Boy, they shouldn't have done that back then, et cetera, et cetera. And that seems to be a good way of describing how the system has been working for quite a while.
And that's going to do for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Stephanie for coming in today, Jack and John. And I didn't know that Francis had decorated our prediction board with Liliana, but it looks like she's decided that she's going to take the wipe and washboard and decorate it with a...
She did a very nice job, too.
Yeah.
Looks good.
With a drawing, with a big-eyed...
Very large eyes.
Yeah, very large eyes. She's got her hand behind her back. Nice flower, green eyes.
How do you like living in the same house with an artist?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you've had to do it all your whole life, didn't you, Jack?
Yes, I do. Now, I don't know if it's the same with my experience. Everything gets thrown everywhere. And it's the artistic temperament is not necessarily consistent with a clean room.
Well, actually, she likes to get her room back together after she's done, but in the process, yes, it can get very messy. She's doing stop motion videos.
Well, I never watched any of those. She was making one here. I never saw one.
Oh,
you have
yeah.
to show me one of these things.
Yeah, yeah. She likes doing these stop motion videos with the American Girl dolls. I think she's pretty much clogged up an entire laptop with them. They're very time consuming. They're very fun. I can forward you a site where she where her idol is, and I'm sure you'll be entertained. Or maybe not.
I promise you, at least watch one.
All right. Sounds good. Until next week, I'm Kyle Moon. Take care.